Dr. Tony Campolo is a renowned author, social activist, and sociology professor. And years ago, while he was teaching at the University of Pennsylvania, he turned one of his lectures into an unforgettable life lesson for his class. He walked up to a student in the front row and said, "Young man, how long have you lived?" Student paused, said, "23 years. Campolo said, no, that is how long your heart has been pumping blood. That's not how long you've lived." And then Campolo told a story from his childhood. It was 1944, and Campolo was a 9-year-old boy who had gone on a school class trip to New York City to visit the Empire State Building, which was the tallest building in the world at the time. And as most 9-year-old boys that have a lot of energy, he found himself running this way and that way across the observation deck, trying to take in the whole view of the city. And then he said he suddenly stopped in his tracks with this realization, "Tony, you are on top of the Empire State Building." And he said in that one moment, time magically stood still. And he said, "If I were to live a million years, that moment would forever remain part of my consciousness." Because he said, it was the way that I lived it. I was fully alive. And then Tony came back to the student and he said, "Now, let me ask you the question again. How long have you lived?" This time it was an even bigger pause. And the student finally said, "Dr. Campolo, when you put it that way, maybe an hour. No, less than that. Maybe a minute, maybe 2 minutes." We're in a series right now on the book of Ecclesiastes. And in this book, the main character of the book is King Solomon, or at least someone who's taking on the persona of King Solomon. And they're on this quest for meaning. And so this person who we've called the searcher seems to have an unlimited amount of resources and freedom and power at his disposal to try and figure out the meaning of life. And so he has this knowledge and education. He's able to chase after every type of imaginable pleasure, whether that's sex or money, food or recreation. And yet throughout this search for meaning, the searcher is confronted time and time again by the reality that life is just like a puff of smoke. It disappears so quickly. And that the things that drive us as humans, whether it's achievement, whether it's position, whether it's title or anything else, doesn't bring any type of lasting fulfillment. And that life can seem so meaningless and empty. And you can go through life with feeling all sorts of doubts and questions and pain. And as we'll talk about here this morning, we'll discover that even in the midst of that, you can still discover beauty and truth in God's presence in ways that can make us all come alive and experience God in new and profound ways. And so here we go, Ecclesiastes chapter 3. It's one of the most well-known passages in Scripture. It's used quite often at weddings, at funerals, even graduations. And here in this poem, the searcher for meaning brilliantly sums up the beauty and fragility and monotony and the huge range of experiences that are found in our human story. And as I read these words, just let that cadence and that repetition feed into your soul. Ecclesiastes chapter 3, "For everything that happens in life, there is a season, a right time for everything under heaven, a time to be born, a time to die. A time to plant, a time to collect the harvest. A time to kill, a time to heal. A time to tear down, and a time to build up. A time to cry, a time to laugh. A time to mourn, a time to dance. A time to scatter stones, a time to pile them up. A time for a warm embrace, a time for keeping your distance. A time to search, a time to give up as lost. A time to keep, a time to throw out. A time to tear apart and a time to build together. A time to be quiet and a time to speak up. A time to love, a time to hate. A time to go to war and a time to make peace. And then he gives this commentary, what good comes to anyone who works so hard all to gain a few possessions? I have seen the kinds of tasks God has given each of us to do to keep one busy. And I know that God has made everything beautiful for its time. God has also placed in our minds a sense of eternity. We look back on the past and we ponder over the future, yet we cannot understand the doings of God. I know there's nothing better for us than to be joyful and to do good throughout our lives, to eat and drink and see the good in all of our hard work is a gift from God. I know everything God does endures for all time. Nothing can be added to it. Nothing can be taken away from it. We humans can only stand in awe of all that God has done. What has been and what is to be already is, and God holds accountable all the pursuits of humanity. And so the searcher begins his poem by observing that there is a time and a season for everything in life. And then he goes on to list this wide range of experiences that we walk through in life, from birth to death, laughter, crying, love, hate, war, peace. All of these experiences represent our shared human experiences. And they form the rhythms and seasons and movements of life. Think of it as that TikTok rhythm of life. But even within that TikTok rhythm of our life, the searcher for meaning also calls us to embrace the moments of life that bring joy and to regard it as a gift from God. And so I think one of the keys to understanding this poem is looking at the juxtaposition behind those two words, time and season. And the contrast here is found in both the Hebrew text and later on the Greek translation called the Septuagint. And in that, we find the words chronos and kairos, two ways of living time, in minutes and in moments. And so chronos is this time that is measured and counted. It's time that can be measured in all sorts of ways, in seconds, in minutes, hours, years. It's where we get our word chronological from, or anachronism. It means clock time or calendar time. And according to Greek mythology, Chronos was this short little god who had kind of stubby, chubby legs and wings on its heels. And it represented that he could move so fast, he could run so fast that once he was past you, you couldn't catch him. He also had a full head of hair on front, but he was bald in the back. This uncomfortable reminder that you can't grab the present once it's done. See, all of us live by chronos time. It's inevitable. We follow this sequence of events that goes and takes us from birth to death. We can't stop it. We can't control it. We can only experience it as it happens. But here's where it leads. If that's the only way that we approach life in this type of inevitable trajectory, then what is the ultimate point of life? I think a scene from one of my favorite movies, What About Bob, captures this perfectly. And I want to show you the scene quickly where Bob is this neurotic, phobia-driven guy, and he's in a late-night conversation with Sigmund, who is the young son of Bob's psychiatrist, and they have this great conversation. Watch the eyes.
Yeah.
Are you afraid of death?
Yeah.
Me too. There's no way out of it. You're going to die. I'm going to die. It's going to happen. What difference does it make if it's tomorrow or 80 years? Much sooner in your case. Do you know how fast time goes? I was 6, like yesterday.
Me too.
I'm going to die. You are going to die. What else is there to be afraid of?
Such a great clip. Well, here's what happens if we only approach life from this chronos reality, we end up living in the past or we end up living in the future. Isn't it true that when you're young, you tend to spend most of your time thinking about what's to come, what's ahead? And I remember this clearly as a kid myself. When I was a child, all I could think about was, oh, I can hardly wait till I become a teen. And then I became a teen and it was, oh, I can hardly wait till I can drive a car. And then I can hardly wait till I can get off to university. And then I can hardly wait till I get a career and then get married and then have a family. And what happened is that I was so focused on all the things to come, all the future things, always looking ahead, that I was never fully present in the moment. And I know I'm not alone here. Many of you are students. And I know even just a few weeks into your courses, some of you, maybe a lot of you, are thinking, man, am I even going to pass this course? Am I going to even graduate? Am I going to, you know, what's going to happen after all of that? What's going to happen? And then we get all of these other stresses and pressures and expectations that are thrown at us that can come from our families, that can come from other people. Maybe you're already wrestling with those questions. Will I be successful enough? Will I find something that brings satisfaction? And so living in the future can bring so much fear and anxiety and panic. And maybe some of you are living so much with that future mentality that it has such a hold on you that you're not allowed and not able to live in this present moment. And then it's interesting, as you get older, you tend to start looking back. You start living more in the past. Maybe some of you are thinking, oh man, I wish I could go back and change that one decision. I wish I could go back and have a different conversation or make a different decision or action that could have taken place. Or, man, those were the good old days. I wish we could just go back and live in that. And so for some people, you might be living so much or holding on to something in the past that it's not allowing you to live in the present. And so while the future can create all this fear and anxiety and panic, living in the past can bring so much regret, shame, failure. Two different ways. Here's the sobering reality, that if we live life just in this chronological trajectory, it will never bring that fulfillment or satisfaction in life. And that's why the searcher for meaning asks, what good comes to anyone who works so hard, all to gain a few possessions? Translation, is there any point to all of this if all life is about is moving from point A to point B to point C? But here's where the shift happens. It's the other type of time called kairos time. It means this designated or appointed time. In Greek, it means the right moment and opportunity. It's actually an archery term. And I love the imagery that comes from it, that as you fire this arrow, it goes with enough force that it actually can penetrate the target. But more than that, it means that when you're firing an arrow, you need to take into account all of the external situations around you. You need to figure out wind speed and air pressure and kind of all that stuff. And so what happens if you watch in the Olympics or you watch people with archery is they're not aiming directly at the target. They're actually aiming a little bit off target as they take into account all these other factors. But what that does is it tells us that even though it may not look right at the time, it's actually going to get you to where you need to be. Allison Levine is an American mountaineer. She's a leadership consultant. She also teaches at the U.S. Military Academy. And in her life, she's completed what's called the Adventure Grand Slam, which means that she has summited all the highest mountains on every single continent, and she has skied to both the North and the South Pole. Allison did a brilliant TED Talk called Lessons from the Ledge. And in it, she describes what it's like to climb Mount Everest. She said, it's not easy. It's not how you would imagine. It's not this linear path from base camp to camp one to camp two, camp three, and then eventually you get up to the summit. She said, no, it's not like that at all. Most of the time is spent going up and coming right back down, going up and coming right back down. And so she said, you start off at base camp one, and you make your way up to base camp, or at base camp, you make your way up to base camp one, and then you climb all the way back down. And then you start from your base camp, you get to base camp one, base camp two, and then you come all the way back down to base camp. And you do this over and over and over again. And she said, it's tiring, it's frustrating physically and psychologically, but that process allows your body to actually gain strength and to acclimatize to all of the pressures that are around you. And then listen to these words. She says, even though you are going completely backwards, you're still making progress. Sometimes you need to go backwards in order to get eventually where you want to be. If you look at life and you live life only as a sequence of inevitable events, the next thing, the next situation, then what we read about in the poem, life will actually get drained of life, of meaning, of purpose. If it's just going to happen, there's nothing you can do about it. But on the other hand, if you approach life and time as a kairos opportunity, if you look at life and count not just the minutes, but you're counting and living in the moments, if you look for the lesson, the opportunity, the wisdom, the joy that is found in that particular moment, then that is a far different story, because there is something to be lived and experienced in every season of life. It's the part that will actually live on. As a searcher writes, God has made everything beautiful for its time. God has also placed in our minds a sense of eternity. We look back on the past and we ponder over the future. So how do we learn to live in this present moment? How do we learn to live in a way that's shaped not just by the minutes that are around us, but by the moment and opportunity that's rooted in that particular situation? How do we live with this kairos reality? I think the Apostle Paul gives us a clue as he taps into this similar idea in the book of Philippians. And from his prison cell, Paul writes these words, I have learned to be content in whatever circumstances. I know how to survive in tight situations, and I know how to enjoy having plenty. In fact, I have learned how to face any circumstances, fed or hungry, with or without. I can be content in any and every situation through the Anointed One who is my power and strength. There's a fascinating research study done by Dr. Daniel Cordero, who is a research scientist and psychologist, and he specializes in emotion psychology and human well-being. In 2014, Cordero and his research team from the University of California, Berkeley, traveled to a remote area in the Himalayas in eastern Bhutan. And they were meeting with one of the last remote people groups in the world. In fact, it was one of only three uncontacted villages on Earth. And so their team was at the end of a five-year study where they were trying to identify human emotions that were universal across all cultures. And they had compiled a huge list of potential ones that they were trying to figure out what is actually universal. Things such as shame, joy, embarrassment. And interestingly, as they were dialoguing with this remote tribe, this tribe was actually able to identify many of the emotions that were there, even though they had had no outside interactions and connections. But there was one emotion that suddenly came alive as they started doing this study. And that was the word and the emotion, contentment. One of the guides made the observation that in our culture, this emotion is very special. It's the highest achievement of human well-being. And they had a word for it called chokshe. It's a deep and spiritual word that means the knowledge of enough. Basically means that right here, right now, everything is perfect as it is, regardless of what you're experiencing outside. And so that one word set Dr. Cordero and his team into a massive new study at Yale. And they dove into 5,000 years of ancient history and human philosophy, 200 years of scientific research, trying to come up with an answer of what it means for humans to enjoy a flourishing existence. Or to tie it into the language of today's message, what does it mean to live in moments, not just in minutes? And they eventually came up with two answers. The first is what they called the more strategy, where people who live by this are constantly trying and living to get more. More money, more position, more validation, more success, more stuff. And it always comes from outside of themselves. So in other words, you need to go there to try and find it. You need to get more and more and more. It's pretty much the same quest that the searcher from Ecclesiastes is on. And the problem, though, with this answer is always how much is enough? How much and how long does happiness actually last for? Because as soon as you get more of something, the happiness begins to diminish. And all of a sudden, you need this hit of, I need something more. And then that lasts for a little bit, diminishes, and then I need another hit. I need to keep going. The second answer that they found was what they called the enough strategy, where people focus their attention not on the outside, but to find happiness that was already inside of them. And they were shocked to find that throughout history, it was the word contentment that was used the majority of time, not the word happiness. And here's what Dr. Cordero concluded. He said, all other emotions require external input. They are reactions to the outside world. Contentment, on the other hand, requires no external input. It is sourced entirely from within. Contentment is the peaceful realization that we are whole and complete just as we are, despite the anger, the sadness, the joy, the frustration, the excitement that may come in and out from time to time. I think that's what the searcher in Ecclesiastes and what the Apostle Paul are saying here. In Ecclesiastes, the searcher says, if you approach life and the different seasons and times only as chronos time, something that is inevitable, that doesn't really lead anywhere, you're always going to be searching for more. You're never going to be fully satisfied. But if you approach life as kairos time, as this opportunity to become awake to the lessons, to the moment, to the aliveness, and the wisdom that it brings, then you're going to discover something else. And that is that God is actually connecting all the pieces of the story together. And because of that, you can live from a place of wholeness and completeness from the inside out. And in Philippians 4, we see almost a mirror of Ecclesiastes. Paul knew the ups and downs of life. He knew the joys, he knew the pain, but he also knew how to find meaning and purpose in it. You see, the real moments of life are found in contentment, in living present to the present, in awakening to the reality of the one who is inside of us, who gives us strength. And Paul says, I can walk through life no matter what is thrown at me because of Jesus. It's not the circumstances around me. It's not the linear sequence of events and the path that I'm on. It's about who is alive inside of me. It's about Jesus, the one who gives me strength from the inside out. I don't know about you, but I find such hope and purpose and comfort in that, that God is present with us. And I love that God himself defines himself as the I am. He doesn't define himself as the I was. He doesn't define himself as the I will be. He defines himself as God who is present right here, right now, in this moment, Emmanuel. See, living in the moment means coming awake to Jesus' presence and life inside of us. It changes everything. It brings purpose and clarity and meaning in ways we could never imagine. When I began preparing for this message, I have to admit I was not in a very good place. In fact, the timing for this message, the actual topic for this message, wasn't good. We were dealing with all sorts of stresses and pressures and details surrounding the relaunch here at 10th UBC. And so lots of stuff was flying at us, all these external pressures and stresses. But even harder than that was the news that a family friend of ours has gone missing. And she still hasn't been found a month after she's disappeared. No leads, no answers. Her family are good friends of ours. And it's been devastating for all of us. And so here I am thinking, how can I even get up to speak about living with this joy and this strength in the present moment when I have so much pain and stress and heaviness weighing on me right now? And so here's what I've been trying to lean into and practice in these last few weeks, and maybe it will be helpful for you. I keep reminding myself that it's not about the what of my situation. It's about the who. A reminder that God is present in me right here, right now. That Jesus is still alive inside of me. And I keep coming back to this reality that in Jesus we find a God who kneels in the dust and the dirt and the pain alongside of us. A God who laughs, but a God who also weeps. A God who touches the broken, who embraces those who are needing that touch. He still speaks hope and life into the tired and the weary. I'm learning to live awake to that presence in this moment. That when my mind tries to pull me into all of this fear, all of these uncertainties around, that I intentionally pause in this moment and allow myself to be recentered back to Jesus. And I know it probably sounds pretty simple, but I find myself keep repeating different prayers over myself. Things like, Jesus, I know you're still here. And even though there's things that are flying at me right now, even though it may not even feel like you're here, I am still choosing to trust you in that. Let me come awake to your presence. It's not easy. I've struggled, but I'm trying to pause in the moment and to start again. I'm learning to be present in the present. I find myself taking walks throughout the day, maybe saying a sentence prayer or two while I'm doing that. I also find that I'm taking a lot of deep breaths. And I'll just do that and just pause and simply trying to live with my eyes wide open to what's going on around me and also what's happening inside of me. And I'm also trying to lean into an enough reality, trying to live life with this sense of gratitude and contentment that life and breath is a gift that is meant to be savored and experienced. And while I still feel overwhelmed by the situations that are flying at me, the things happening in minutes and hours, I'm also learning to respond with a moment, reality, and experience. And you know what? It's okay if all you did today and do today is survive. Some of you need to hear that. It's okay if all that you happen and all that happens to you today is that you simply survive in this moment. That's a great place to begin. To begin really living in the present moment, start there. Your present circumstances don't determine where you can go. They merely determine where you start. Listen to that again. Your present circumstances, they don't determine where you're going to head. They only determine the starting point for today, for this moment. Don't just measure your life in minutes. Measure it in the moments that you embrace. Let's pray. Jesus, in these final minutes of this service, I pray that through the words that you are speaking to each of us right here, right now, may we sense your presence, may we sense your aliveness and hope within us. All of us entered this room with carrying different weights, different stresses, different pressures, different anxieties and fears. Some of us could be incapacitated by the future. Some of us can't hold and can't let go of the past. But in this moment, we once again recenter our minds, our hearts on you, Jesus, on the one who is present in this particular space and moment that we are experiencing right now. May you come and fill us. May you come and surround us with your presence in beautiful and unexpected ways. In Jesus' name.